Vivo! Welcome to Bobby Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by a good friend of ours, Ben Wilson, who does great work here at the network. We're going to be taking a look at the start of the season that the Big Ten has gotten off to, taking a look at teams that might be reverting to form a little bit more after maybe a tempo change. Looking at you, Cincinnati, has not necessarily gone their way, and taking a look at just the way that you're able to decipher a little bit of value from teams that might be changing things up, or if a small sample size might be withholding for a team as well. We're going to take a look at a few teams that he feels have been surprises both through the positive and the negative as well. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Sunday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you've got one of two ways we'll fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larsium, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please you send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Why did not get in any Twitter/X questions? Everything is powered by Better. Better is making it better to be able to get into the game because it's easier than ever to take a look at some daily fantasy. All you need to do is go to BETR.app, and then when you type in the promo code of VSIMPOD, that is VSIMPOD, you get $10 free. It's that easy. It's that simple. And then you just pick whether or not you think a player is going to go over or under their stat line, and boom, you're all good to go, and we're all good to go to take a look back at what was a fun college basketball Saturday. Not necessarily a big one, but a fun one. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
Only two ranked teams in action, and they both covered very, very easily, and they were both able to get overs. Indiana over Bethune-Cookman, 156. We already saw Bethune-Cookman take Auburn to overtime. No such luck here as Jacoby Edey had 15 points for them, but Indiana, they did a nice job controlling the boards. They win that rebound battle 43-29. They win the turnover battle 11-7. And you had in this game Tucker Vries go off for 5-10 3-point shooting, 20 points. Trio of guys, Trent Sicily, Nick Dorn, and Sam Alexis, all with approximately 14 points off the bench. No more, no less. And for Arizona, that defense is really stifling. 98-61 all over Norfolk City. In this one for Norfolk State, they went 5 of 16 from 3 point range, and they lost the turnover battle by a count of 14-10. And for Arizona, they win the rebound battle 44-27. Co-Pete, nice performance here. 16 points out of him. Montejuvas Carivas led the way with 20 points, 9 rebounds off the bench. Anthony Del Rosso was able to give the team 16 points. And for Arizona, they didn't really need the 3 ball. They only go 2 of 11 from 3 point range, but they still get the job done very, very easily. This team is not ranked, but they might be pretty soon. LSU all over DePaul, 96-63 in the Emerald Coast Classic for DePaul. They actually win the turnover battle 15-13, but they got dump trucked on the class, losing that battle 37-19. As for LSU, Dedon Thomas was able to supply 5 assists. He goes off for 12 points off the bench. Robert Miller, Rashad King, Jalen Rice, all between 11 and 13 points apiece. And Cruz McClure did have 22 points off the bench for DePaul. He was their lone double-figure scorer, so that was a nice, big, giant butt-kicking right there. And then for the ACC, this was not great for them. Drake all over Georgia Tech, 84-74, the final. Georgia Tech, one of your better defenses in all of college basketball, but they did not hold a peer. Jalen Quinn, 31 points. He had himself a nice performance for a Drake team that went 8 of 19 from 3-point range. Drake and Georgia Tech, both just 6 turnovers in this game, and for Georgia Tech, they might have had a chance had they not gone 7 of 18 from the free throw line, so not great to say the least. Drake also wins the rebound battle by a count of 36-32, so nice clean win there. Houston Christian looking a little bit rough right now, 80-62. They got blasted by Georgia Southern, as Georgia Southern went 10 of 25 from 3-point range, 19 points out of Spud Webb, one of the best names in all of college basketball, so we certainly have to highlight anything involving Spud Webb. And for Nebraska, they remain undefeated, but this was a bigger test than we thought. And I did the interview with our good friend Ben Wilson before we knew the results of this one. I was joking, hey, Nebraska should be able to overcome USC upstate, and they did, but it was closer than expected. 72-63, the final for Nebraska. The guy that was able to shine in this game was Price Sanford, 20 points, 9 rebounds. As for Nebraska, they lose the turnover battle 13-11. They do win that battle in the glass 45-36, but USC upstate 12 of 35 from 3-point range. Kamani Gregory was able to supply 20 points, so they did a very nice job holding in there. And This team, they looked like they were going to be able to get a good cover, but not so much. George Mason now 8-0. George Mason was down 35-32 at the half. If you, like me, had George Mason plus 11.5, 12, 12.5, this was rough. 82-66 the final. Technical foul was not great in the final few seconds for trying to get that cover, but Corey Mincy was great for George Mason. 25 points for George Mason. The old James Madison going 9-31 from three after they had been shooting over 40% coming into this game. George Mason also wins the turnover battle by kind of 10-6. So very nice quality performance there. Merrimack not generating the turnovers that they did in past years. 78-58. It was Hofstra that absolutely took it to them. Hofstra did have 14 turnovers in this game, but Preston Edman was able to spy 22 points, and Merrimack 10 of 33 from three-point range. That's just simply not going to cut it. You had a very nice expose in this game of defense from Northern Kentucky. 74-65 all over Boston U. That was a total that I was seeing overnight at a 150+. And if you took the under on the close of Army versus Manhattan, 27 points in overtime pushes this one over. Total close at 151.5, open at 159.5. Should have been able to get there regardless of your number, but 81-78 the final. Army is able to get the job done as Army goes 15-32 from 3-point range, 6-6 at the free throw line, and Manhattan was 15-17 at the free throw line. So if you took the under in that game on the closing number, man, you deserved a little bit better. And for Central Florida, they were able to give you something better as they take down VMI 82-57. Without Ricky Bradley, it's been quite tough for this VMI team. They go 8-34 from 3-point range. Central Florida covers this game despite going 4-30 from 3, but they dump trucked on the glass 57-38. Jamichael Silwell, 21 points, 14 rebounds for Central Florida. They were one of your hotter shooting teams in all of college basketball. They cool down, but they win the turnover battle 13-8 to be able to overcome that regression. So nice quality win by them. Delaware State looking like they're in for a rough season, 71-57. They lose to Delaware State, and we saw a 63-point first half combined, not just one team, combined between IU, Indy, and Morehead State. So you had like 117 points to play within the second half between Morehead State and IU, Indy. So despite the fact that they scored a combined 102 points in the second half, easy under there, IU, Indy gets the job done by a count of 85-80. Kyler DiAgostino and Micah Davis, they were able to combine for 49 points in this one. And for Morehead State, they did go 25-32 at the free throw line, but problem was they lost the turnover battle by a count of 22-13. So that was a little bit too much for them to overcome. Akron continues to rock and roll with their offense 105-81 all over UW-Milwaukee as Amani Lyles was able to spy 25 points. And Akron's not going to shoot 12 of 23 from 3-point range night in and night out, but this team just continues to find ways to be able to generate offense. And for this Akron team, still pretty good on defense as well. Milwaukee only shot 38% from the floor, so I have to give a lot of credit where it is due. Cal Baptist, they go on the road and they take it to Oregon State. Oregon State has now lost 5 straight games, 75-69 the final. Dominique Daniels, who was out in the previous game against San Diego, returns for 12 points, and for the Cal Baptist bunch, they win the rebound battle 34-31. Nearly costed themselves at the free throw line going 13 of 20, but for this Oregon State team, they go just 22 of 52 from the floor. So nice upset win for the Lancers, even though on a lot of lines they were darn near a pick 'em. And for Penn State, a nice quality win over Sacred Heart. They take it to them 90-59 the final. So that's a Sacred Heart team that's been very much up down all around, and unexpected scare for Utah State. They do get by, but they needed it overtime against Montana State, 84-81 the final. Utah State does stay undefeated. They go 8-22 from 3-point range. Another nice game from MJ Collins, 23 points. But for Montana State, they go 16-18 at the free throw line. They lose the turnover battle 16-10, but they actually won the rebound battle 43-37. Credit to them, as they really don't have that one like core guy down low. But Patrick McMahon, 26 points, 8 rebounds, that kept them very lively in this one. And then he saw high point not to be a low point, winning cover against Western Carolina 93-73 the final, as Cameron Fletcher, 22 points, 10 rebounds, a quality double-double out there. And then this was quality from Winthrop, 101-79. They take it to South Carolina State. South Carolina State has been one of your, shall we say, lesser teams in all of college basketball thus far this season, but you were catching a lot of points, 20.5-21.5, so yeah, a little bit of intrigue there, but not quite able to cover. And Gardner Webb right now just looks rough. They were catching 18.5 to 19.5 against UNC Wilmington, and they did not cover. 88-62 the final, and you get another over in a Gardner-Webb game because they just simply cannot play defense to save their lives. So very much something to be taking a look at out there. And how about Southeast Louisiana's 4.5-point underdog? They do take down Navy 69-65. So we did see a lot of fun in college basketball on Saturday. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise what we're getting in college basketball right now, the unders now have a nice lead on over. 611 unders of 590 overs, so nearly 51% of games are going under, and favorites just continue to dump truck. 616, 583, and 16 against the spread. That's a 51.4% hit rate to the favorites right now, and it's the road favorites that are really coming through. 123, 101, and 6 against the spread. That is 54.9%. If you just take a look at what we all got this week, the past 7 days, unders sitting at a clip of 54%, 183 unders, 156 overs, and favorites 57.2% the last 7 days, 195, 146, and 5 against the spread. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we're all getting trend-wise. Coming next, how about if we do chat it up with our good friend in Ben Wilson? He does such great work here at the network. He's got a great play-by-play voice, and he joins me next right here on Cusco Hoops with myself, Greg Eves Peterson, now a part of the Neeson Family Podcast. Are you looking to get an inside edge this college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact, on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter. And start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. Your lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Hoops with myself, Greg Eves Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Ben Wilson aboard. He's doing an absolutely tremendous job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball and so much more. As his play-by-play work, it's pretty much whatever sport is being played, whether that be tennis, college basketball, college baseball. I mean, you name it, he does it. He does a tremendous job here at the network with regards to a lot of our live betting shows. He's sometimes catch him overnight as well. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at his first name Ben, an underscore, last name Wilson, then another underscore, and then the number one all together. Ben, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, likewise, Greg. Great to be on here post-Thanksgiving. And man, what a fun week of action it has been. Finally seeing some of these marquee matchups for the first time. It's been a treat. And really, I mean, next week we get conference play started here for at least these bigger conferences.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned that. How do you take a look at these conference games that we are going to be getting in the next few days, whether that be the Big Ten, the Metro Atlantic always starts relatively early, because I always find that they just have a little bit of a different tenor to them rather than the games that get played across New Year's / after New Year's.
I mean, they 100% do. And as much as there might not be any like traditional handicapping situational spot, look at, say, like these Big Ten openers, right? You've got a lot of these teams coming off long travel, whether it's USC, we can talk about here in the Big Ten. I've been super impressed by them, but I'm fascinated after going to Maui and you win. I guess the championship game was won decisively over ASU, but the way those games all played out, I mean, those were tight games. The game before was a triple overtime against Troy. Now you go on the road to Oregon. I certainly believe USC, like that's a classic situation where the team is definitely better. They should be favored on the road. I'm sure they will by a round of possession, but how does the team look now when you're going from Maui to Eugene, Oregon after this gauntlet of travel and all that? So I think that's just one of many of these situations we have, especially now that, I mean, basically everybody's playing from these major conferences, playing in some sort of high profile Thanksgiving tournament, whether it's Players Era, Maui, Bahamas, you name it. And it does present kind of a weird, like you're going through, you know, the interesting kind of off-kilter time of holidays and travel and all that. So I wouldn't really look too much into some of these conference openers as far as making grandiose statements, Greg, right, about about the teams. I just think, if anything, there are certain spots where I'm probably going to stay away from more than others simply because of what we just saw this week going into the conference openers next week.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you know me, I am someone that I do not want to be prisoner of the moment. I don't want to be overreacting or anything like that. But how about the week that the Big Ten had? Everyone not named Oregon, it felt like, had themselves a really good week. And Northwestern losing that game to Oklahoma State. But Michigan absolutely dump-trucking everyone out here in lovely Las Vegas. USC winning the Maui Invitational. Wisconsin has been looking relatively strong. Michigan State, they take it to North Carolina. You're able to just go down the list. And I feel like the Big Ten has reintroduced themselves as one of the best conferences in all of college basketball, even with Illinois losing that game on Friday.
No, 100%. And you look at some of the advanced ratings. I mean, they're just a shade behind, you know, the SEC that I think everybody had kind of gone to as that de facto, no doubt, top of the line, number one conference. And look, you've got the best defensive team in the country right now in Michigan, best offensive team in the country in Purdue. It's hard to argue against what those two at the top. I mean, you could not have dreamed of a more dominant, comprehensive three-game against blue blood competition tournament than what Michigan pulled off in Vegas. I guess my big question now for the Big Ten is, I mean, there is a little bit of this in the SEC. It's not to the extremes, though, that we get in the Big Ten. I mean, look at Michigan, right? They're this super fast, this awesome offensive team, and also can lock you down on D. But Purdue, Michigan State, I mean, Iowa this year, UCLA, as we know, Minnesota, Rutgers. That's six teams right there that are in the bottom 65 in the country in tempo. And so how does that play out now? And how does that maybe try to negate some of the athleticism and some of the edges that these good offensive teams will have? I think that's the big thing to keep in mind and just look out for as we go into conference play, because similar to the SEC, I totally see these conference kind of ebbs and flows being very drastic. And you're going to get a lot of teams who will end up kind of coming into that late February, early March stretch, Greg, where you're like, you know, 9-7, 10-8 in conference play. And it's not something they'll look at and go, okay, well, that disqualifies, you know, team A for making a deep run. I just think that's how this league is going to play out. Even go down the board, like even Nebraska has been incredibly impressive as a, you know, a top, you know, I mean, they've been a legitimate top 40 offense this year with, you know, beating Oklahoma in a shootout and Kansas State, the way they pulled that one out a week ago. So even a team like the Huskers, it's definitely not the first team you think of, right? When you think, you know, outstanding, talented Big Ten basketball. But there's a lot I like about Nebraska as maybe another sleeper that's going to be a really tough out, especially at home. And that's another one. Like, we're going to see them Wednesday home against Wisconsin. What an awesome spot that is going to be, I think, for the Huskers. I should say a week from Wednesday. I think that'll be an awesome spot for the Huskers, the way they play in general and how rock solid they've been so far for Fred Hoiberg.
Yep, and we're doing this ahead of the USC Upstate game from Saturday. If they lost that game, that would not be great, to say the least. But I think that they're going to be able to get the job done in that one. I don't know if they're going to cover the Mondo spread, but I do think that they should be able to get the job done there. And for Nebraska, it has been quite impressive what we've been seeing out of them, as well as Ben Wilson. Always impressive what we see out of him. He's going to be right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And that's certainly a standout for me in terms of one of the best surprises in all of college basketball this year. And who are a few others? Because I mentioned Wisconsin. They lose to a TCU team that, I don't know how this happens, but they lose at home to start the season to the New Orleans Privateers. Shout out to the Privateers, who now have Master P in the organization, so good on them there. But they lose that game, and then they knock off the defending champions of Florida, and they knock off Wisconsin out there in the great state of California. They're a team that has been all over the place, and I feel like there have been a lot of great surprises, including, like, I mean, we just go back to Michigan. I thought they were going to be good. I didn't think that they were going to be so good that they just completely ravage the entire Las Vegas tournament.
I mean, no question. There's no way you could have seen that coming. And also, like, on the Wisconsin front, I mean, they have the big Marquette game, the interstate rivalry. As you and I know, Greg, that is like the marquee non-conference showdown. And then they go to Nebraska. That's kind of why I think that spot will be really good for Nebraska coming up here in a little over a week. But yeah, I mean, I think about TCU, and the big question for Jamie Dixon's team has always been, you know, where's the offense going to come from, right? And you know, a team, they don't really blow you away, not a great three-point shooting team, and they have some undersized guys like Jaden, you know, Jaden Pierre takes the bulk of their, you know, bulk of their shots and their usage. But in today's day and age of college basketball, like an undersized 6-foot guard, it's really hard to, especially in a league as rugged as the Big 12, hard to create space and separation for a guy like that. So I still have some question marks about TCU, but at least what they've proven is that they don't need it to be, you know, a super grinder type slow tempo game to hang in there with these teams. You know, even in the Michigan game that they lost at home by four, like they were still really effective on the defensive end against a team that wants to run super fast, that jacks up a ton of shots. It's really efficient. But anytime, I mean, you're a team that's top 10 in the country in turnover rate, like TCU is, you're going to be live in a lot of games. And that's, I think, what we saw even against a veteran team like Wisconsin, who you tend to assume will do a really good job of protecting the ball. Same deal like with Florida. This TCU defense, I think, is going to wreak a lot of havoc. And I mean, they forced 19 turnovers against the defending champs. Like, that's a team that had been so battle-tested, so resolute, and yet TCU came out and were so disruptive. I think that's the big thing to watch out for on TCU, and why I think they will be right there in a conference where you can pull Coles. I mean, even as high as the top teams in that conference, even the, you know, Iowa States, Houston's of the world, it's not like everything is completely settled. And so, well, it's not like I'm saying TCU make a bet on them to win the conference. I do think they'll be right there.
Yep, absolutely. And I do think that entire Big 12 is so interesting as well, because Arizona, they had the statement win to begin the season. They also knocked off Florida. Florida must just not love playing against the Big 12 right now, to say the least. But I mean, Arizona's been solid. Iowa State has really not done a lot to really cause any doubts about them. They've been looking pretty good to begin the season. We know that Houston lost that game to Tennessee, but I don't think that there's any shame in losing to Tennessee as well. And I take a look at the top of the Big 12, those top six, top seven teams, and I think that you could put those top six / top seven against almost any and all of college basketball, with really the fear being some of those bottom teams like a Colorado, who they themselves had a really good weekend being able to knock off a pair of nice teams, including that nice win against Washington.
No, they did, right. It's sort of like the Big Ten, right? Like Oklahoma State kind of out of nowhere playing this uber fast tempo. Colorado with Tad Boyle, some resurgence here.
Oklahoma State is 7-0.
I know, yeah. A couple of 7-0 teams right there. Okay, here's one, and this is where we love to get nerdy on this show. I just wanted to bring it up because, as you know, I do all the WAC games and see all those teams. Cincinnati, as long as we're talking Big 12, they play Tarleton on Monday, who's a WAC team. So Cincinnati, I don't think there is a team in a Power Four conference, Craig, who has a wider disparity between offense and defense. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but Cincinnati is absolutely, like, they cannot score to save.
Why they sped up their tempo makes no sense at all.
Watching them, I mean, the Louisville game, I think, is where most people watched them. They were really manhandled there by the Cardinals last week, but they look so inept on offense in every way. And you're right. It's like you're jacking up shots quick, tons of threes, but they can't make any of them. I hate when coaches dive into that sort of philosophy when they don't really understand the personnel. But the defense is great. I mean, this is one of the best defenses in the country, top 15 turnover rate. They are a sixth overall in KenPom defense. So they're taking on a Tarleton team Monday that basically, like, for lack of a better term, Greg, it's a football team that just happens to be on the basketball court. It is one of the worst shooting teams like I have ever covered. And now they lost. I mean, they had Freddie Hicks, who's still on the team somehow, who's continued to gain eligibility here. Like, he's an awesome player for them, but they are such a rugged, hard-nosed team. That game will be so ugly. And yet I can't wait to see what the total is. The KenPom projections, like 144. I have a hard time seeing that game getting to 144. I'll just say that here, looking ahead to Monday. But man, is Cincinnati going to be a fascinating night-to-night team to handicap in the Big 12 with how big of a disparity there is when you're looking offense versus defense.
Oh, no doubt about it. That is going to be a lot of fun to be taking a look at. That Cincinnati team is one of very big intrigue as well. And how much do you take a look at some of these teams early on during the season that perhaps they go back to their roots a little bit more? Because I notice in past seasons that San Diego State, a non-conference play, would play pretty fast. And then right when they get to Mountain West play, they realize, maybe we shouldn't be trying this. Let's get back to what is tried and true. And I feel like Cincinnati might be one of those very good candidates, because I think Wes Miller is on a very, very, very hot seat, is going to get it through his skull after that Eastern Michigan game. That's like, maybe we should slow down a little bit more, because we've got great defense in our offense, led by Kirk Creese, is a little bit of a knucklehead out there on the court, is leaving something to be desired.
Yeah, well, it's not only that, and you're totally right. I think the other one, that as long as we're talking Big 12, that falls into this category too, is K-State. Fascinated to see how they bounce back, if they do, against Bowling Green Monday. But I mean, they've been playing at a lightning fast tempo. That's not really what you think of when you go through the years of, you know, of Jerome Tang. I mean, it's always been kind of
at least they're hitting shots, though.
Right. No, exactly. So, like, at least they have that. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, they continue to play this fast, assuming, like, once the 3-point numbers start to regress a little bit, because I don't know about you, Greg, like, I don't think they're finishing the year as good as PJ Haggerty has been. I love watching him play. like this is probably not the fourth best 3-point shooting team in the country, with all due respect to Kansas State. So like, what happens when that regresses a little bit and you're starting to face the much better Big 12 teams? Do we see them try to lean into the physicality a little bit more? Defensively, I just haven't been impressed. I mean, they got waxed at Indiana, and they had the crazy game against Nebraska last week that was down to the wire, total coin flip game. But that's another one where there's a lot to like, especially from an offensive perspective, and they have changed things up pretty significantly. But I mean, in the Big 12, like, if you're going to play fast like that and you don't really have a defense that can hang, like, you're just asking for trouble. Once you get the BYUs, Arizonas of the world, Iowa States, KUs, I mean, you just go down the line. And that generally has not been a great recipe for success in that league.
No, not at all. It's certainly interesting, to say the least, what we're going to be getting out of them. And then, are there any other teams of intrigue that you're looking at? Because I know that you do a lot of games out here on the West Coast. You've talked about doing a lot of WAC games. Loyal Marymount is a team that I know you've been covering quite a bit as well. Are there other teams that you're taking a look at and you're keeping your eye on? Maybe they've been underachieving, overachieving, or you just expect to be able to find a little bit of value on them in general moving forward?
Yeah, so if we go to the WCC, and I think everybody's been talking about, wow, what's wrong with Gonzaga? And I mean, they'll get another opportunity here taking on Kentucky to prove that they still belong as one of the top, you know, 5-10 teams in the country. But I was almost hoping to manifest, Greg, this WCC, having, you know, covering it, being such a good top to bottom league. I wasn't really sure how that would look, but man, like, it's actually been way better than I would have anticipated. And I guess if there's one pleasant surprise, I would actually say Seattle, who beats, I mean, they go to Stanford, win on the road, a true road game at a top 100 team. For Chris Victor, like, the defense has been really, really solid. That's a team I covered a lot when they were in the WAC, and it's a really interesting game. They're playing this tournament right now where they'll take on UC Santa Barbara, which is a really good litmus test, and a team that's also shooting threes at a really high clip with some, you know, really talented players. I mean, Braden Maldonado, undersized guy, covered him a good amount there going back to the WAC days, and last year he was a great leader for them. Still there, shooting at a 50% rate from three. Will Heimbrot's another guy they kept. So I have a ton of respect for Chris Victor. I think that's like the team. It's the conference. Anytime you get a conference, Greg, like mid-major that takes off, you've got a bunch of schools really impressing, and you go down the line. I mean, St. Mary's 8-1. Santa Clara looks good at 6-1. LMU, who I cover regularly, they're 7-1. You know, even the Dons of San Francisco, like, they might only be 5-3, but well, that's still a team who's already beaten, you know, Minnesota, Bradley already this year, and taken some good teams to very close contests. Seattle's kind of the team that sticks out to me as maybe the forgotten team, thinking this could be a tough first-year transition in the WAC. But that defense is for real. I think they've got the vets to hang in a lot of these games, and that's one that I just want to earmark away, see how the offense develops. And Seattle, and take a team like Wazoo, right, who just can't play any defense, or some of these teams a little bit further down in the conference. Oregon State's been brutal defensively this year. Those are the sorts of teams that I think Seattle will match up really well against, because they can take advantage of those porous Ds, but also not really be leaky on their own sides when they're on defense. So Redhawks, mark them down, Greg, is a team that could be a little frisky in that conference.
I love it. I typically have on a man from Seattle and Curtis Rogers, who does a great job covering things out there. I'll need to ask him about that team as well, because I know that he's been a little bit of a stan of Chris Victor himself. They're now out there in the WCC, and I think that there's a little bit of upside there. And there's always upside when you're aboard, Ben, because you do a tremendous job covering a little bit of everything, whether you're doing indoor football, baseball, basketball, tennis, we name it. You're able to cover it all. You do a great job with your dulcet tones on the call for so many of these games as well. So love to get people at home know it's all on tap for you, and how people can follow along on social media to other platforms.
Yeah, you got it, Greg. Always a pleasure. Ben_Wilson_1 College Hoops, NBA G League as well going on right now. So we are into it, fully locked and loaded for this winter hoop season. All aboard.
Absolutely. And Ben, every single time he joins me, lends such great insights, and did so once again today. So big thanks to Ben for joining me on Cuscus Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Sunday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by our guy, Ben Wilson. He does an incredible job here at the network. He's one of the better play-by-play voices that you're ever going to hear, by the way, whether that be indoor football, tennis, college basketball, college baseball, we name it, he does it. And every single time he joins me, lends such great insight. So big thanks to Ben for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Sunday as we we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /XFeed at GUnit_81, and we're going to be going in the last execution order. We really don't have any of the funky bunch tournaments anymore, so the games involving two bigger conference teams will be up top, and then games involving any teams from this conference. Merrimack always gets thrown in the extra games. Apparently, they still think that they're in the NEC, but the Northeast Conference, the America East, the Atlantic Sun, the Big South, you've got as well the MEAC, the SWAC, if I haven't said so already, the Southland. I think that I've covered them all. The Patriot League as well. So those are going to be the games at the bottom. Let's get things started with 735, 736 on the card. Neutral court game between Princeton and St. Joe's. St. Joe's hopes to not be average Joe's as 3 to 4 point favorites. Totals 147 to 147.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with St. Joe's. I did set them as an 8 point favorite. This Princeton team is just not the same on offense. They're right now 272nd in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Lost their top three scores from a year ago. Right now, Jackson Hickey and Daylon Davis have been leading the way. Hickey has been able to give you about 13.5 points, four boards, and then Davis has been able to throw in their 16.5 points, three assists per game, but Davis now dealing with a little bit of an injury. We have not seen him in a little bit over a week. That's not great, to say the least, for this team. They actually fared halfway decent without him in that game against Vermont, so a little bit of a shout-out there, but that's really hurting this team, as you just don't have a lot of rebounding. Malik Abdullah, he's been able to give you about six rebounds per game, but this has never been a team that would generate second and third chances. Credit to them, they're a top 35 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage, but they also give up quite a few open looks from three. And for St. Joe's, obviously a lot of just, shall we say, chaos with this program, because they had their coach in Billy Lang step down very, very early before the start of the season. Then Steve Donahue has to take over in September, but you still have talent on this team. Deuce Jones and Jaden Glover have come in as transfers, combining for over 30.5 points per game. Jones was the A-10 rookie of the year last year, only shooting about 30% from three, and we should see some positivity with the fact that St. Joe's is shooting 26.8% from three-point range. They're still rock solid down low. Justice Ajabor is not giving you any scoring, but he's giving you about two blocks per contest. You've got Desar Haskins being versatile, 9 points, five boards. So I do think that for St. Joe's, team that's been having a tough time generating turnovers, only about 10.5 turnovers per game, that they're going to be able to hold down a Princeton team that isn't the same three-point shooting team as a year ago. This team has been very good in terms of getting offensive rebounds. They themselves giving up a lot of second chances, but I don't think that Princeton pulls in those second chances. And in a close game, this is a St. Joe's team that shoots 79.8% of the free throw line, top 20 mark in the country. So set St. Joe's as an 8 point favorite, going to be one late. Set a total of a 146 Princeton. Mid tempo team, but typically they're a little bit more slow and controlled. I think that they get back to their roots like the under and St. Joe's. 737, 738 on the betting board. It is Old Dominion, and they're on the road against America's favorite tag team. You don't just get William, you don't just get Mary, and you get both. Now, if you were just getting one of them, they'd be an underdog, but since you get both, they are between a 6.5 to a 7 point favorite. Dawn's game is 161.5. I certainly would fade it if it was only William or Mary, but even with it being the tag team, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Old Dominion. With William and Mary, they could use three other players out there on the court, and for William and Mary, this is a team that doesn't have a lot of rebounding, to say the least. They've been outside the top 275 in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, because it's very difficult to rebound just bombing away from three. That's a Brian Earle style. Now, it does set up for some good two-point shots. This has been a squad that has been in the top 30 in terms of their two-point shooting percentage. That said, 15 turnovers per game, that's just not going to cut it for this team, as they're still searching for that main point guard. Chase Lowe has been able to give you about 9 points, 3.5 assists per game, but that said, they have a lot of guys that are missing from a season ago. Now, I do think that the guys like Kate Askins, who comes over from Dartmouth at 6'6", 9.5 points, shoots 40% from three, and Tunde Vahil-Vasasi, who's been able to give you 8.5 points, saying 6'7", 6'8". These are guys that fit the system really well, but for Old Dominion, I do think that this squad is going to be able to hunker down a little bit more with their rebounding. Last year, they were a top 25 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots, resulting in an offensive rebound this season. Right now, they're checking in outside the top 180 in terms of rebound percentage, but still have Caleb Swanton-Roger, a true 7-footer, who's giving you a block, 7.5 points, points, 5 rebounds per game. Jordan Battle has been doing a little bit of everything. 3.5 assists, steal and a half, 5.5 boards, 11.5 points per game. And you do have just a lot of mixing and shaking. Robert Davis dealt with a little bit of injury to begin the season. He was their top returning scorer, 15 points per game. A lackluster, only about 8.5 points per game this season. I do think that that's going to be going earthward. You've got LJ Thomas and Casey Shaw who come over. They've been able to combine for about 26.5 points per game. And for Old Dominion, last year they were awful with their three-point shooting. They're now shooting about 34.5% from three. Some positivity there, then a little bit negative in the fact that they're outside the top 200 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. And it's an Old Dominion team that's really not going to generate a lot of turnovers outside the top 300 in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. But I do think that Old Dominion gets back to those defensive roots. I think that it's going to be a lot of one-and-done possessions with William & Mary. This is going to be a team that looks a gun, very much so. They're 28th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I think Old Dominion, when it's all said and done, is going to be looking to slow down from their current pace of 242nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. So at 12-156, I like the under and the points with Old Dominion. 739, 740 on the card. UT San Antonio, meet for the Roadrunners. They play also South Alabama. South Alabama, a 1.5 to a 2.5 point favorite. Total is 138.5. And I said South Alabama is a 1.5 point favorite. So at 2 plus, that does become my buy point here on UT San Antonio. UT San Antonio is a team that I think is going to look to run under Austin Clonch. They're well outside the top 100 right now in terms of total possessions per game. But I do think that for this UTSA team, they are going to be able to find their bearings a little bit more. And this squad, I think, is going to be looking to generate a lot of turnovers. That is the Austin Clonch system. Right now, they're a top 150 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. And they're holding teams to shoot not so well. They're a top 40 team in opponents' field goal shooting percentage. So that's been rock solid. You've been able to get some good play down low as you've got Babacar Njai, who's been able to give you 9.6 half rebounds per game. Caden Rayfield has been a nice surprise with about 7 rebounds per game. They just don't have that go-to score like they did a season ago in Primo Spears. Jameer Simpson has been able to give you 19 points, 5 boards. I don't know if he can quite be that guy coming over from Southern Utah, but so far, so good out of him. But the other guards are just not necessarily there with this team. But Daniel Akintobi has been able to give you a little bit of a low post play as well. And you still have a team with active hands. And as the season goes along, it is going to be going faster and faster for UT San Antonio. Meanwhile, South Alabama, this team is outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. And the South Alabama team, they pride themselves on generating turnovers as well. Last year, we're in the top 50 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Right now, they are outside the top 75 with this regard. But they're doing a great job of not allowing teams to get to the free throw line. They're daring you to shoot from three. They are allowing teams to shoot 22.7% two-point shots per game and 37 threes! 37! Teams are attempting about 60 field goal attempts against them, and 37 are coming from three. Like, I've never seen a system quite like this. And South Alabama had an extreme system last year, but they've taken it to another level this year. As we had Adam Olsen, who's giving you 15 points per game. They bring in a lot of D2 guys, like a Baden Law has been able to give 13.5 points, 6 boards. Randy Brady is back from a season ago. He's giving you 7 boards per contest. So South Alabama doing a great job of not allowing a lot of second and third chances. They're not allowing you to get to the free throw line. They are essentially just daring you to shoot from three. And right now with UT San Antonio, neither here nor there. They're shooting in that neighborhood about 32% for three. And that's all said and done. I do think that they're going to be a better three-point shooting team. I did set my line here at 2, and with as many threes as they are going to dare you to take, I think you get an over. And I think that you get some late game fouling here, though. Might not be the greatest for UT San Antonio, shooting 64.5% at the free throw line. So do like this total over. I sell my total at 143.5, and at 2 plus, give me the points with the Roadrunners. Meep, meep. 741, 742 on the card. Chattanooga is going to be playing us at Tennessee State. Tennessee State does find themselves as an underdog of 7.5 to 8.5 points, 156.5 to 157, and with Chattanooga, I did set them as a 7-point favorite. I'm going to be one take the points with Tennessee State. Just not the same Chattanooga offense that we've seen in past years. You lose your top 2 scorers from a season ago. Really, you lose 4 of your top 5 scorers from a season ago. They bring in guys that aren't necessarily the world's greatest 3-point shooters. Billy the Kid Smith, who comes on over from Bellarmine, is a good shooter. 10 points, 2.5 boards. He last year shot over 40% from 3. Right now, he's shooting about 40% from 3. Teddy Washington, he's a nice statue surfer that comes over from Southeast Missouri. Very safe. 1 point, 4.5 boards, 3 assists, a steal per contest, but he's shooting less than 30% for three, just like last season. Now they're getting Colin Bullholland back. That's their main low post presence. They're going to need him to pull in more than 4 rebounds per game because this team is getting absolutely plowed on the glass. Malachi Richards is the only guy that gives you over 4.5 rebounds per game, but Jordan Frinson has been a nice surprise. He's been able to give the team 12.5 points per game, and this team still does a great job in terms of taking care of the ball. Top 100 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. They're shooting about 35% for three, a little bit down for their standards, but not necessarily too bad. This is a team that year in and year out is outside the top 200 in terms of difference points allowed on a per possession basis, and you do have a Tennessee State team that is looking to gun it. Last year, they were in the top 50 in terms of total possessions per game, and his team has struggles with their overall shooting. They're right now shooting 29.7% for three, and I really don't see it going northward, but this team has been, over the last 2 years, a top 75 team in terms of offensive rebound percentage. Jaden Jones, deal with a little bit of an injury, has been earning this team, but you've been able to get some good production out of Dante Harris along Travis Harper in the backcourt. They're combining for about 30 points per game, and Harris has been able to shoot 38% for three. Long and winding road for him. He's been at three different power conference schools, so I think that he can give this team a little bit of a boost, and what they really need him to do is take care of the ball, because right now, 16.3 turnovers per game. They are outside the top 345 in terms of ball security, but they're absolutely plowing teams on the glass right now. I think that they're going to be able to win that battle. That'll be able to keep them lively. Chattanooga, typically not a fast team, but not a slow team. They're typically hovering right around about 200th in terms of total possessions per game. With all the new pieces, they're down to about 300th in terms of total possessions per game. Got Tennessee State team that's about 15th in terms of total possessions per game, but Tennessee State, not necessarily efficient with regards to their offense, but I do think that the offensive rebounds keep them lively in this game. So that total 153. I like the under, and I do like the points here with Tennessee State. Made them 7-point dogs. 743, 744 on the card. It is Hofstra, and they're going to be on the road against Penn. This game has no numbers since these two teams played yesterday, but I've got my handicap. I've got Hofstra as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 1.5 with them, 2.5 more, taking those points with Penn, and then 153.5 for Lessing on the over, 154.5 for higher the under. Hofstra last year was one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, and they've sped themselves up. They're back inside the top 125 in terms of total possessions per game, and for Hofstra, they were last year actually number one in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage. I just knew that that wasn't that style under Speedy Claxton. Typically, you get good guard play and a little bit of suspectness down low. You've got Victory Antonio, who's been able to give you 8.5 rebounds per game, so he's been rock solid for Hofstra down low, and this is a Hofstra team that's not allowing a lot of second and third chances on the glass. They themselves are not necessarily generating a ton of them either, but with Cruz Davis, he's one of the better mid-major guards in all of college basketball. Entered in yesterday, 20 points, 5 assists, shooting 40% from 3-point range. James Patterson, he comes over from Iona. He and Preston Edman have done a nice job in terms of easing things off of his play, giving you a combined 27 points per game. Edman has been able to give you about 5.5 assists per contest as well, and this is a Penn team that has always been relatively rock solid on offense. That's actually all Fran McCaffrey teams, and then on defense, they leave something to be desired, and right now, Penn has been looking to play up-tempo, top 75 team in terms of total possessions per game. TJ Power entered into yesterday, 14 points, 9 boards, and you've been able to get some good rebounding as well. Dalton Scantleberry, he's been able to give the team 6 rebounds per game, but it's the Ethan Roberts show right now. Enters into yesterday, 22 points, 5 boards, 3 assists. I think there's going to be a little bit of a fall off with the fact that Penn is right now shooting 39% from 3-point range, but they do surround themselves with relatively good shooters. It's a team that does an okay job of taking care of the ball. I'm not going to call it great, I'm not going to call it terrible, but you know what, that's a little bit of a work in progress in year number one under Fran McCaffrey. But that said, I do think that with this Penn bunch, they do a solid job of being able to hold in there. But I do think that in the end, you do have a Hofstra team that just has a little bit more in terms of backcourt play, and I do think that they're going to be looking to slow this thing down just a little bit. So 153.5 or less, I'm going to be in on the over. 154.5 for higher the under, and with Hofstra willing to lay up to 1.5 with them, 2.5 where we're taking the points with Penn. 745, 746 on the card. It is Wyoming, and they are going to be on the road facing off against Texas Tech. Texas Tech does find themselves as a 19.5 to a 20-point favorite. Totals between 151.5 to a 152, and set a total of 148. I do like the under. Wyoming was last year, well outside the top 275. In terms of total possessions per game, they are seeing a pretty big speed up with regards to their tempo. Right now, they're checking in 75th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Texas Tech, very mid-tempo team, just like a season ago, about 182nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You don't have quite the same backcourt play that you had a season ago with Texas Tech. Losing Darion Williams was big, and I mean, Christian Anderson at times looks like a really, really good guard, and at times he sometimes no-shows. He's right now been able to give you about 18.5 points, 7 assists, shoots 41% from 3, but it feels like it's been a little bit all or nothing with him this season. Tyree Bryan comes over from Santa Clara, need a little bit more than 7 points per game out of him, but Donovan Atwell is shooting right now 46% from 3. Let's call it what it is, though. Main guy for this team is JT Toppin, 21 points, 11 boards, a block, a steal, 3 assists per game. This guy has been a man amongst boys, and it's a big reason why Texas Tech has been able to be one of the top offensive rebound rate teams in all of college basketball. This has been a team that has left a little bit of something to be desired on defense, though. They are outside the top 75 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis with Wyoming. I don't know if they're going to continue to quite play this up-tempo. They did bring in a guy in Leland Walker who played over at Eastern Kentucky a season ago. He looks to run it and gun at 12.5 points. He last year was really good at generating turnovers. That's not quite as much his system, though, but you've been able to have Caden Bennett come over from Quinnipiac, shoot in the mid-30s from three. He and Nasir Meyer both give you 10.7 points per contest. With Wyoming, this team always prides themselves on being rough and tumble on the glass, and right now they're a top 40 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots. They result in an offensive rebound. They've been a top 175 team in generating turnovers, and they're allowing teams to shoot 23.6% for three. Now that's going to be going northward. That's a little bit of a byproduct of a small sample size, but Wyoming's been able to play some solid defense. I'm not going to call it amazing, but they're a top 125 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. I do think that they do a relatively solid job of holding up here. Now with Wyoming, a lot of their games have been coming at home, and they've been coming against teams that are a little bit lower tempoed, so that is a big reason why they're allowing less than 69 very nice points per game. But that said, I do think that for Wyoming, they're able to do an okay job of hanging in there against a Texas Tech backcourt that feels like they're in a little bit of transition. Semi-line at 18. Going to be willing to take those points with Wyoming. Set a total of a 148, so also an on the under. 747, 748 on the card. Belmont is on the road against Charleston. Charleston is a home underdog of 3.5 points. An on scheme between 154.5 to 156.5, and I do like Charleston here on the money line. I set them as a 2.5-point favorite. Charleston's numbers right now are very warped by the fact that they have been dealing with a lot of injuries. Now, they got back Mr. Dean, but then Mr. Dean got injured again. That's his actual name. First name Mr., last name Dean. But that said, now you've got back in the fold what I think is really the cornerstone of this team, Connor Hickman. He was really good over at Bradley 2 years ago where you gave that team 15-plus points per contest. Right now, he's playing 14 points, 4.5 boards, and this team is shooting less than 20% from three-point range at home. Last year, Charleston shot over 41% from three at home. Are they going to shoot 41%+ again? Probably not, but they're better than less than 20% from three, and they should be able to win this battle down low. Christian Reeves is a true 7-footer that comes on over from Clemson, 7.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. You've gotten some good versatility out of Martin Kalou, who's been able to give you 12 points, 5 boards. He's been able to shoot 35% from three-point range, and for Belmont, this is a team that's incredibly sloppy with the ball. Right now, they're outside the top 340 in terms of ball security. They're turning the ball over 15 times per game. Now, last year, they shot the snap out of the ball from three-point range, and this year, they're doing a rock-solid job once again. You got a pair of wings in Tyler Lundblad and Sam Orme, who would be able to combine for about 31.5 points per game. You've got these two guys combine and shoot about 39 to 40% from three-point range, and then Orme has been able to give you 7 boards, 3 assists, a steal per contest. Nick McLean, who comes over from Eastern Washington, he's going out 6.5 assists per game, but again, those 3.3 turnovers per game, they are a little bit costly for this team, and then just have some mixing and shaking with Drew Skronowski, who's been able to give you about 10.5 points per game, but he's dealing with a little bit of injury. Isaiah West, he's been a little bit of a non-factor. Thought that he might be able to give this team a little bit more. And Belmont, they're right now allowing opponents to shoot 25.5% from three. Are they improved on defense after last year? They were well outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and a lot of teams to shoot over 35% from three. Yeah, I think that they're better than that, but at the same time, they're not good enough to allow opponents to shoot 25.5% from three-point range. So do you think that Charleston sees some positivity? I think that this comes down to some late game fouling as well, so I set this line at 2.5. I like Charleston outright on the money line, and at a 156 or less than on the over, semi-total 156.5. 749, 750 on the board. It is St. Bonaventure. They are on the road against Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic 3.5 to 4.5 point favorites. Total on scheme between 146.5 to a 147.5. Made a total of a 149.5. I do like the over. Now, St. Bonaventure, one of the slower teams that you're going to find in all of college basketball right now, outside the top three in terms of total possessions per game. This is a Florida Atlantic team, though, that they're going to look to move it. As for this Florida Atlantic team, they don't necessarily go super up-tempo themselves. They're only about 280th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but they're incredibly efficient on offense, and they're incredibly inefficient on defense. Florida Atlantic right now shooting 35% from three-point range. They've been a top 75 team in terms of offensive rebound percentage. You've got a pair of guys in Devin Vanderpool and Kenan Carlisle combining for about 32.5 points per game, and with Vanderpool shooting 35.5% from three, Carlisle just not a great three-point shooter. He's shooting 28% from three. Classic heat check guy, to say the least, but for this Florida Atlantic team last year, they were one of the most deplorable three-point shooting defenses in all of college basketball. Right now, they're allowing teams to shoot 41% from three-point range, and I do think that that's going to allow the Bonnies to be able to hold in there. So you've got a St. Bonaventure team that they should be able to do a nice job bringing the fight to them down low. You've got Frankie Mitchell, a double-double machine over at Kenesha 2 seasons ago. He's doing that right now for the body, 16 points, 10 rebounds per game. Daryl Buddy Simmons has been able to give you 17 points per game. He's shooting 40% from three. And Bonaventure as a whole shooting 37% from three-point range. They've been a top 125 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, and they're a very strong interior defense. Top 20 team in terms of block shot percentage, as you've been able to get a pair of blocks per contest out of Joseph Grovich. You've got Amari Marshall give you some good minutes as this team has actually decided to go to the bench. DeShaunte Bowen is right now giving you 3.5 assists per game. It is a Bonaventure team that's turned the ball over about 12 times per contest, but they've been good at generating turnovers as well. So I think the Bonaventure are going to be able to hold in there. I think that this is going to be close enough for late game following, and I think that you flat out get some good offensive execution. Set my total at a 149.5, so I like the over, and I'm in on the points here with Bonaventure. 751, 752 on the card. San Diego is on the road against Long Beach State. Long Beach State is a 1.5-point home underdog. It's on this game between 152 to a 152.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on San Diego. I set them as a 3.5-point favorite. Long Beach State is looking to play a little bit more up-tempo than they did a season ago. This is certainly not the Dan Monson days, though, where they were just absolutely gutting it. Right now for this Long Beach State team, they're hovering right around about 200th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And for San Diego, they've been able to get much more efficient on offense this season. Right now about 246th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, as Steve Lavin brought in some nice guard play. You've been able to have Tonori Lane come over from the sub ball, give this team 12 points per game. And then Juan Sebastian Gorecito last season was a 40% three-point shooter over at Ball State. And he's come in, he's shooting 42% from three. Lane is shooting 47% from three. We'll see a little bit of fall off there. The big thing for the San Diego team is that they're getting just absolutely dump trucked on the glass. They're outside the top 275 with regards to rebound percentage, but the line teams only shoot 31% from three. Top 150 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And since Chris Acker has taken over this program, this Long Beach State team has been sloppy with the ball. Outside the top 250 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis, they're only shooting about 30% from three. Now, top 150 team in terms of generating turnovers, but they're also a team that fouls very, very frequently. A top 55 team in terms of fouls committed on a per possession basis. They bring in Shakir Bender. He was over at Manhattan. He's been able to help out the backcourt a little bit with 10 points, shooting 39.5% from 3-point range. And then Peter Mestrovich, who he comes over from Syracuse, about 12.5 points, 7 boards, low to mid 30s, 3-point shooter, but need a bit more out of Isaiah Lewis, who comes over from Little Rock. He's right now leading the way with about 2.5 assists per game, but 2.7 turnovers per game, only about 6.5 points per contest. And then Derek Michael Zeviero, who's their top returning rebounder, is only giving you 2.5 rebounds per game. So they're not even doing a great job on the glass. I will say they're not allowing a lot of second and third chances, but a lot of teams are just burying their first chances. This has been a unit that has been outside the top 275 in terms of both opponents' 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage. So I do think that for this San Diego team, they do find a way to persevere. I think that this is going to be a lower tempo game, and I think that for this Long Beach State team, they're just not necessarily going to be efficient enough with the ball to be able to help you out with the over. So semi-total more around a 145.5. I'm in on the under, and I'm going to lay up to 3 over San Diego. 753, 754 on the card. Fresno State plays host to Cal State Bakersfield. Meet for the Roadrunners as Bakersfield's 9.5 to a 10.5 point dog. 147.5 to a 148.5 is the total. And for Bakersfield, I did set them as an underdog of 8.5 points, so I'm going to be willing to take those points. I'm just still not bought in on the Vance Wahlberg style. I don't understand how he got this job to start with. And for Fresno State, credit to them, they're 6-2, but they already lost at home to USC Upstate. They've been playing a lot of outgun competition. Jake Heidbreder has been solid. 20 points, 3 boards, 3 assists, shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point range. It's a Fresno State team that's a little bit better with their 3-point shooting than a season ago, shooting 33% from the outside, but still not doing the best job in terms of generating good possessions or turning the ball over 13.5 times per game. They're outside the top 3 in terms of offensive rebound percentage, as they've lost a lot of their big men from a season ago. Wilson Jaquez is right now giving you about 6 rebounds per game. Lone guy in the roster that's giving you over 5 rebounds per game. And for Fresno State, last year they were on the more up-tempo teams in all college basketball, been a lot more mid-tempo this season. And for Bakersfield, you have the switchover that happened in the offseason, just very, very unfortunate that happened with regards to the trafficking thing. So now you've got Mike Scott, who is the interim coach, and they're trying to stay true to their roots. This has always been a team that's been looking to pile drive the ball inside. They're a top 10 team in terms of percentage of their shots that come from 2-point range. You've got CJ Hardy and Dalen Smith combined for 30 points per game, and Hardy last year shot 40% from 3, currently shooting 50% from 3 on low volume because they just don't attempt a lot of 3s, but Bakersfield has always been a menace in terms of being able to generate second and third chances. Top on our team in terms of offensive rebound percentage, Ron Jessamy, who comes on over from Tennessee State, 11.5 points, 7 boards, 2.5 blocks per contest. Love what he's able to bring down low. You've been able to get some production as well out of Pierre against Batiste, hopefully I said that correct, comes over from Fresno State, ironically enough. He's been able to give the team 6.5 rebounds per game, and I do think that though this Bakersfield team is very sloppy with the ball, they're turning the ball over 15.5 times per game. They've been okay in terms of being able to generate turnovers. They're pretty good at being able to guard from the outside, and I think that that's going to keep them lively in this game, and do think that this is going to be a little bit more of a mid-tempo game. I think that you could be close enough for some late-game fouling, so set a total of 148.5. You're at the 147.5. I like the over and the points with Bakersfield. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra game, 755, 756. UC Irvine, Zod, the Anteaters are on the road against San Jose State, and old San Jose State is a 1.5 to 2.0 underdog. 134 to 135.5 is the total, and I'm actually going to be in on the over for this game. I set my total at a 139.5. Now, I recognize that with UC Irvine, they're always such a good defensive team. They're always in the top 50 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but this by no means is a team that's looking to play super duper slow. They're actually 108th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, despite the fact that they're only allowing 63.5 points per game. Darren Sarin has been very versatile for this team. 14 points, 7 boards, steal and apper contest, not necessarily going bombs away from 3, and this team should see a positive bump from their current 27.9% 3-point shooting. Jerian Nixon has been able to shoot 40% for 3. He's giving you 17 points per game, but this team always manhandles teams down low. This has been a unit that has been allowing a few more offensive rebounds than what we're accustomed to in the past, but still a top 150 team in terms of rebound percentage, but they're currently a top 10 team in terms of opponent's field goal shooting percentage. But I think that they execute really well down low, which is why I do like the over, because San Jose State is right now allowing teams to shoot 72% from two-point range. Out of 365 Division I teams, that's 365th. Now, they've got Kobe Garland, who's really been able to cook, 19 points, 4.5 assists, shooting 35.5% from three. For a San Jose State team, that's like 350th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They've got some nice low-post pieces. Marcus Overstreet is giving you 4.5 boards per contest. Zadarik Nananana has been able to give you 5.5 boards, 6.5 points per game. And then you've got the gentleman that comes over from Iona in Yafat Mundi, who's been able to give 11 points, 8.5 boards per contest. And Jermaine Washington shoots 39.5% from three. So, I mean, this team is able to give you a bit of something from the outside. But that said, they are just so weak in terms of giving up these open twos. I do think that UC Irvine is going to be able to pound them down low. This is a team that loses a lot with the likes of Ben Lykin and company gone from a year ago. But Kyle Evans, he's done a nice job with about 10.7.5 rebounds per game. You should be able to win that battle down low and get the job done. Semi-total 139.5. I like the over, and I do like UC Irvine. Willing to lay up to 4 with them. And now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-559, 306-560. You've got LaSalle and Merrimack doing battle from the Palestra. This game's off the board since these teams played yesterday, but I've got my handicap. I did set LaSalle as a 4-point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay up to 3.5 with them. 4.5 or more, I'm willing to take the points with Merrimack and set a total of a 138, so 137.5 or less. And on the over, 138.5 or higher, the under with Merrimack. They're just not generating turnovers the way that they have in the past. Every year at the Division I level, they've been a top 25 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Currently, they are checking in well outside the top 125 with this regard, and it's not even like they're pumping up their tempo. They're still outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. They're still a poor 3-point shooting team, entered in yesterday shooting less than 30% from 3-point range. You've had Ernest Shelton and Caviar Kennedy combining for about 31 points per game, but they need some help from their friends. They're still getting absolutely plowed on the glass. They're outside the top 300 in terms of rebound percentage, and for this LaSalle group, I do think that they're going to be able to win from within. You do have a guy in Justin Archer who has played in the Darius Nichols style for quite a while, going all the way back to his time over at Radford, give you about 5 boards per contest. You've had Jaden Marshall and Jerome Brewer do a nice job as a tandem of being able to combine for 22 points per game. LaSalle probably going to leave a little bit of something to be desired from the outside. You do have someone like a Brewer who comes over from Florida National, where he was a stat sheet sufferer but never really shot it well from 3-point range. And Rob Duckery has been able to give you about 8.5 points per game after he began his career over at Texas A&M. So, and you do have a lot of guys doing a nice job in tandem. And I do think that for LaSalle, they're going to do a nice job keeping Merrimack off the free throw line. This has been a top 20 team in terms of fewest fouls committed on a per possession basis. Now, Merrimack has been one of the better perimeter defenses in all of college basketball, but I do think that in the end, even though LaSalle is outside the top 300 in terms of 2-point shooting percentage, they win from within. So I'm willing to lay up to 3.5 here with LaSalle, 4.5 more, taking the points with Merrimack, 137.5 or less, and on the over, 138.5 or higher, the under, 306-561, 306-562. It's LeMoyne and Ball State. They're going to be doing battle on a neutral court. This game is off the board, but that said, I've got my handicap. I did set Ball State as a 3.5 point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay up to 3 with them, 4 more, taking the points with LeMoyne, and then I set a total of a 148.5, 148 or less in on the over, 149 or higher the under. Got a Ball State team that's been a looking to play very slow. They're outside the top 3 in terms of total possessions per game, but to their credit, top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They square off against a LeMoyne team that's turned the ball over 14.7 times per game. That is a top 50 mark to the negative in all of college basketball. Now you've got some nice pieces in the backcourt. I like what Trent Mascara has been able to bring, 13.5 points. He's a guy that is right now shooting 40% from three. Think that there's going to be a little bit of fall off. Ja'Kai Sanders comes on over from St. Peter's, and he's done a nice job giving the team 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists, 10 points per game, and you finally have a little bit of size down low. That was one of the biggest things for LeMoyne going down from the D2 ranks to the D1 level. You've got Shiloh Jackson, who comes over from Texas A&M Corpus Christi, 14 points, 2 assists, 2.5 blocks per game, but it is a LeMoyne team that certainly is getting just cooked from outside. Right now, they're allowing teams to shoot 41% from three. We should see a little bit of positivity there. This is not necessarily a Ball State team that's going to be going inferno mode from three-point range. That said, you've been able to have Davion Hall be able to shoot about 40% from three, give the team 12 points per contest. I like what Elmore James has been able to bring, coming over from Ohio, about 10 points, shoots in the mid-30s from three. Again, this is a team that does a great job generating turnovers. A lot of that thanks to the UTEP transfer and Devin Barnes. UTEP is always one of the best systems in terms of generating turnovers, and he's been able to sell that in this team a little bit. But you also have a Ball State team that has been not so great in terms of hitting the glass outside the top three in terms of percentage of their missed shots that resulted in an offensive rebound. Right now, Davion Hill and his 5 rebounds leads the way, and just need a little bit more of Juwan Maxey as well. Comes on over from Youngstown State, where last year he gave that team 11.5 points per contest. He's been more of a reserve that hasn't found his footing yet with about 6 points per game. So, circumstance for the Ball State, I'm willing to lay up the 3 with them. 4 more. Take the points with LeMoyne, 148 or less, in on the over, 149 or higher, the under. 306-563, 306-564. Siena and Maine do battle. These two teams played yesterday, so this game is off the board. Neutral court game, in which I did set Siena as an 8.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 8 with them. 9 or more, taking the points with Maine, and set a total here of a 132.5. 132 or less and on the over, 133 or higher, the under. Maine has not exceeded 65 points in a game this year. This offense is really not getting going. Like, man. Chris Markwood always does a good job in terms of instilling defense, but we could use someone to hit a shot here. They're shooting less than 30% from three. Now, to their credit, they're holding teams to shoot less than 30% from three. They're not quite doing the same job in terms of generating turnovers as they did with Kellen Tynes and company. They lost a lot of the backcourt from a season ago, but hey, man, they're turning the ball over 15 times per game while being outside the top three in terms of total possessions per game. That's not great. You've got Ryan Mabry, who began his career in the MAC and the Metro Atlantic. He's been able to come in. He's been able to give this team like 8.5 points per game. It's TJ Beals, the only guy that's giving you over 9 points per game. And he's been essentially suffering coming over from Southeast Missouri State. 13.5 points, 5 boards. He's actually shooting 38.5% from 3-point range. But this is also a main team that just doesn't generate a lot of second chances for themselves. They are outside the top 350 in terms of offensive rebound percentage. This is even with having Ace Flag. And yes, that is a brother of Cooper Flag. And then on the flip side for Siena, this is a squad that very much should be able to win from within, as it's a Siena unit that right now has been a top 100 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They're really pushing things inside, by the way. They are not allowing teams to pop it from three. They're a top 15 defense in terms of fewest percentage of bonus shots that come from three. So an outsized Maine team, they're going to have their issues there. And Gavin Doty and Justice Schultz have been able to do a nice job of headlining things. Schultz is that main point guard, 2 steals, 5.5 assists, 12.5 points per contest. Doty is right now shooting less than 30% from three. That should be going northward as Siena as a whole entered into yesterday, shooting 26.4% from the outside. We should see some positive progression as Brandon Coyle last season, he shot over 40% from three, down to 34% this year. He's giving you about 11.5 points per contest. Doty shooting less than 30% from three. Last year, he was more of a 28.5% three-point shooter, so the positivity probably not going to be there with a 6'5 combo player, but you do have a Siena team that's been very solid in terms of generating turnovers, top 125 team, in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. They're really not putting you on the free-throw line, and I do think that this is going to be a slog of a game with Siena also being outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per 1-8 with Siena, 9 or more taking the points with Maine, 132 or less, and on the over, 133 or higher, the under, 306-565, 306-566. Appalachian State and UNC Asheville are going to be doing battle. Neutral court game from the Cherokee Center, and right now Asheville is a 2.5 to a 3-point favorite, 140.5 to 141 is the total. I said Appalachian State here as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on them on the money line. Appalachian State has been grody with their defense. They're currently 300th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Have to believe that this is going to be a team team that gets things straightened out with that regard. I do think that they're going to do a nice job down low with Dustin Kearns at the helm, as you've been able to get about 5.5 boards and 8 points per game out of Luke Wilson. No, he was not an old school, but I mean, it is pretty old school the way that this team plays, as you've got a pair of guys in Alonzo Jodd and Jalen Tott who have been able to combine for about 17.5 points in the backcourt. Dodd is that main facilitator with 3.5 assists per game. And for Appalachian State, they keep things very clean and efficient. They're a top 30 team towards fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, and they need to because they're only shooting about 30% from three-point range. And for UNC Asheville, this is an incredible shooting team. Right now, they're shooting over 39% for three. That's a top 25 mark in all of college basketball. 355th in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis, so that's not great to say the least. They do have a nice post presence in Toya Solomon, 15 points, 6.5 rebounds per game, and then the duo of Justin Wright and Cameron Taylor have been very good in the backcourt, combined 35.5 points per game. Right now, Wright, who is a very good three-point shooter over at NC Central a few seasons ago, he's shooting over 50% from three. Should see a little bit of regression there. DJ Turner-Patrick has been a little bit in and out of the lineup. He's been able to give the team 7.5 points, shoots over 40% from three, began his career over at Charleston Southern, and he should be good to go in this game. He played in the previous game against Tennessee State, so looking positive on that side of things. But this is a Nashville team that they're well outside the top 200 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. This is typically a team that gives up a lot of second and third chances, and right now they're outside the top 350 in terms of their defensive rebound percentage. I do think that what Appalachian State has inside allows them to get the job done, so set Appalachian State as a 2-point favorite. I like them on the money line, and with this Appalachian State team, they're always very good at being able to slow down games. They're back outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. Have a Asheville team that's not really looking to push tempo either, right around about 198th in terms of total possessions per game. So set a total of 140, like the under, and I do like App State on the money line, 3-6-5-67, 3-6-5-68. Stone Hill's on the road against Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac does find themselves as a 13.5 to a 14.5 point favorite. Turn on this game, it is 149.5, and I said Quinnipiac is an 11.5 point favorite. I'm going to be one thing the points. Now for Stone Hill, not having Will Batchelor in the backcourt has been hurting them, and this is a Stone Hill team that's went well outside the top 300 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Defense has not been terrible, though, with Stonehill. They don't generate any turnovers whatsoever. They're outside the top 350 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They themselves outside the top 320 in terms of taking care of the ball. So having 6 more turnovers than their opponents has been very, very costly, because they're a middle-of-the-road team in opponents' two-point shooting percentage, or a top-runner team in opponents' three-point shooting percentage. They're not doing a bad job on the glass. They've been a top 225 team with that regard, but you could use that guy out there in Batchelor, who's been that number two scorer. You've got Herman Coffey, who's back from a season ago, 16 points. He's shooting 39.5% for three. And Devontae Hackett, well, he has been able to hack it. He's been able to shoot 37% for three, 10 points per contest. You've been able to get quite a bit down low out of the secret transfer and Ramon Espinal Guzman, who's been able to give you 8 boards, 9 points, and chips in there, block per contest. And then Rudvan Tudic, he's been able to give you about 6.5 rebounds. Began his career over at Maine and New Hampshire, but that's it for Quinnipiac. This is a unit that has just a lot of size, with 6'7", Keith McKnight, and Amari Monroe doing a nice job in tandem with combining 27.5 points, about 10 rebounds per game between the two of them. Jaden Zimmerman is a backcourt guy that just knows what the heck he's doing, 15.5 points per game. And Quinnipiac, after last year, they were a rough three-point shooting team. They brought in Samson Riley, right now shooting 66.7% from three. That'll go down, but now they're shooting about 37.5% from the outside. Quinnipiac has had their fair share of turnover issues. Right now, they're middle of the road in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, but they've done a much better job being able to guard the perimeter. I do think that Quinnipiac is going to be able to do a nice job of being able to win down low, but I don't think it's so demonstrative that they cover quite this big of a number. So I did set my line at an 11.5. I'm going to be one to take those points. Quinnipiac last year was a pretty up-tempo team, and it's not as if they're gunning it this year. It's not as if they're playing super-duper slow. They're about 81st in terms of total possessions per game. Sono, with all the injuries, they've had to slow themselves down to about 162nd in terms of total possessions per game. So set a total of 145. I'm in on the under. 3-6-5-69, 3-6-5-70. Fairfield plays host to New Hampshire. New Hampshire is a underdog of 9.5 to 10 points. 147 is the total, and with Fairfield, I set them as a 12.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay that number for New Hampshire. It's just a really rudderless and strange team at this point that feels like it's still trying to find their identity under Coach Nathan Davis. You've been able to have Bella El Shakiri and Jack Graham be able to combine for about 25 points in the backcourt per game, and you've had a team that when Kijan Robinson has been out there on the floor, they've been able to have some nice facilitation. He comes over from Hofstra. He's been able to give you about 4 assists per game, and should be good to go in this one. He returned in that game against Brown. He made as many shots as myself in that game against Brown, but he did return in that game against Brown, but it just still doesn't have a ton down low. You bring in John Squire, who is right now giving you about 6 rebounds per game, began his career over at Pepperdine, so comes over from the great state of California. And El Shakiri has been able to give you about 8 rebounds per game as well, but it's also a New Hampshire team that has been really getting it taken to them down low outside the top 200 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They really don't generate a lot of turnovers, and they are outside the top 300 in terms of both their two-point and their three-point shooting percentage. Meanwhile, on the flip side, you've got a Fairfield team that they leave something to be desired with regards to overall shooting percentage, but they're very efficient in terms of just taking care of the ball. Top 75 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per-possession basis. They've done a nice job as a top 85 team in terms of percentage of the missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, with Brandon Benjamin being that top guy, 11.5 points, 9 rebounds per game. And then Deuce Turner down for what? The Deuce has been loose coming over from San Diego, 13 points. He's shooting 40% for three. Braden Sparks, he's back from season ago. He's giving you 15 points per game. And then you just need to get a little bit more out of Cam Estevez. He comes over from Rhode Island, where he was a solid scorer for them, only about 5 points per game. That's been a bit of a disappointment. But I do think that the overall size and the way that Fairfield does a great job in terms of taking care of the ball, going to be able to win out in this spot. It is a New Hampshire team that is really looking to be able to find a little bit more in terms of just a set identity, because they've had some years where they've went super duper fast. They've had years where they've gone super slow. They're back to super slow at about 97th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. We've got a Fairfield team that's certainly not looking a super duper push tempo, but mid-tempo team, 141st in terms of total possessions per game. So did set a total here of a 148.5. I do like this total over, and I'm going to be willing to lay with Fairfield. 36-5-71, 36-5-72, Stetson and Robert Morris who battle. Robert Morris is a home team, and this game is off the board because they played yesterday, but that said, I did set my handicap as I said Robert Morris here as a 12.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 12 with them, 13 or more, taking the points with Stetson. And I set a total of a 148.5. So 148 or less in on the over, 149 or higher the under. Typically, I go a little bit north of 150 on the total, but in this case of having a back-to-back sort of situation, shade down that total a little bit. You've got a Robert Morris team that has been looking to push a little bit of tempo this season, about 250th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And for Stetson, typically when the team is firing all cylinders, they were playing super slow. They're more around about 188th in the country in terms of total possessions per game with Stetson. They're just a deplorable defense. They're outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're going through a lot of transition right now, as well as you just have not been able to get really anything down low whatsoever for Stetson, and that's what's truly been killing them. This team is outside the top 225 in terms of rebound percentage, and they also shoot 62.2% at the free throw line. That's not great. They entered in yesterday shooting 36% from three, with their main returner and Jamie Phillips give you 16 points shooting in the mid-30s from 3 points, and then Alex Doyle, Ethan Copeland in tandem, they've been able to shoot over 40% from three apiece. Doyle's actually shooting over 50% from three. That's not going to last, but I mean, other than Jamie Phillips, you don't have a single guy in the roster that's giving you more than 5.5 rebounds per game, so that's a little bit of a problem, and they're outside the top 270 in terms of their opponent's two-point shooting percentage, and that's where Robert Morris is going to be able to hurt them, because they bring in the North Carolina A&T transfer Nicholas Chatakoulis, 13.7 boards per contest. Deshaun Good has been Mr. Good, 6'8", do-it-all sort of guy, 12 points, 9 boards. He's able to pop it from three-point range, currently only shooting about 1.5 threes per game, but he's shooting over 40% from three-point range. And then the main returner, Ryan Prather, has been cold from three, shooting 25.5% from three. That should be going northward. Robert Morris has had a tough time taking care of the ball, 14.5 turnovers per game. Stetson does not generate any turnovers whatsoever, though, and for Robert Morris, they've been rough at the free throw line, but they really don't generate a lot of free throws either, so that actually doesn't hurt them too much in this spot. This has been a team that has held up down low. They've been a top 75 team in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage, being themselves on the top 150 in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. So, is that Robert Morris is a 12.5 point favorite, 1 to lay up to 12 with them, 13 or more taking the points with Stetson, 148 or less, and on the over, 149 or higher, the under, 306-573, 306-574. Yale is on the road facing off against Vermont. Vermont is a 6.5 underdog. 154.5 is the total. I set my total at a 145. I'm in on the under. Maybe I'm just a schmuck, but I just believe that Vermont is going to get back to their defensive ways here. It's a Vermont team that's right now 230th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but if you look at their last three games, they are one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, and the only reason why they're 230th right now is because they played that double overtime game against Brown. So if you look at them in terms of possessions per 40 minutes, they're still outside the top 275 in all of college basketball. Now Yale, top 25 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. You've got Nick Townsend and Isaac Salazar, who are very versatile pieces. Both are between 6'6", 6'7". Townsend, 19.5 points, shooting 55% for three. We'll see that go downward a little bit. 7.5 rebounds, 5 assists per game. And then Salazar has been able to give you about 4.5 boards, 3 assists to go with his 13.5 points per game. Yale shooting 45.9%. 7-for-3, and they're going to be a great three-point shooting team. That's going to be going downward a little bit, and I do think that Vermont is going to be able to find their defensive swagger once again. They got a little bit plowed by Liberty from three-point range, but that said, this is also a Vermont team that is going to do a nice job in terms of not allowing second and third chances, top 45 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage, and getting back Gus Yeldon, who missed the first three games of the season, former top 150 recruit, giving the team 17 points, four boards down low. That's going to be all help out quite a bit. And then you've got the TJs. TJ Long, 17.5 points, five boards, shooting 37.5% per three. TJ Hurley, 42% three-point shooter, 13.5 points per game. Like these guys. Do I think that you're going to get some efficient offense? Yes, but I think that this is also going to be a slow-down game because Yale's not necessarily looking to gun it either. They're about 320th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. So set a lower total here for 145. I'm going to be in on the under with Vermont. Set them as a five-point underdog. Give me those points to go along with the under. 306-575, 306-576. Bucknell is going to be playing us Cornell. Cornell is a road favorite here of 4 to 5 points. Right now, the total is strangely off the board. I can tell you that I set my total at a 151.5, so 151 or less in on the over, 152 or higher, the under. As for Cornell, they haven't been quite as efficient on offense this year as they have been in the past, but they're still pretty rock solid with that regard. They're playing a Bucknell team that is not necessarily going to move it, but at the same time, they're not the slowest team in the world, about 270th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. For Cornell, they've been having a little bit less balance because they've been number 6 in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They do lose 3 out of their top 5 guys from a season ago, but one of the main holders from a season ago in Cooper Norad has just been taking things over. How about 22.5 points, 5 boards, shooting about 40% from three, and then Adam Sang-Hinton has really become a nice number 2 guy. He's giving you about 3 assists, shooting 43% from three, 14.5 points per game. The other main holdover from the season ago is Jake Feigen, who's been able to give you 14 points, but he's only played in 2 games thus far this season. He's been a little bit banged up. Now with Cornell, they're a little bit better on the glass than they have been in past seasons. They bring in the Valparaiso 6'7 big man and Casper Sepp. He's giving you 6.6 rebounds per game after last year. He actually had more rebounds than points when he was over at Valparaiso. You've got DJ Nix, who's been an ancillary piece for the team the last few seasons, and he's been able to give you about 8 points per game. Really what the 3-point shooting does for Cornell, because they are attempting the second most threes per game of any team in all of college basketball, but it sets them up for really good shots from 2-point range, as last year they were a top 5 team in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage. You're back in the top 50 this season. It's a Cornell team that's always going to be lackadaisical with their defense. They're back outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but I do think that Bucknell is going to do a pretty solid job in terms of holding in there. I do like the fact that Bucknell has been able to limit a lot of second and third chances on the glass, so they themselves outside the top 3 in terms of their own offensive rebound percentage. You've got Amon Doris, who's been able to give you about 14.5 points, comes over from Germany, 4.5 rebounds at 6'10". He's actually been shooting about 32% from 3-point range. Brandon McCreech, he's been able to shoot 37.5% from 3, 7.5 points per game. It's a Bucknell team that has really had a tough time taking care of the ball outside the top 290 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. They should see some positivity with the fact that they're allowing teams to shoot 38% from 3-point range, but it's also a Bucknell team that has been able to get some good production out of Archelet Spendone, who's been able to give you about 10 points, 2 steals, 4.5 rebounds per game. Bucknell is also a top 225 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. 151 or less in on the over, 152 or higher the under. And for Cornell, made them a 5.5-point road favorite, so going to be willing to lay up to 5 with them. 36-577, 36-578. Lafayette is going to be playing us some Monmouth. This game is off the board because both of these teams played yesterday, but I've got my handicap as I've got Monmouth here as a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 2 with them, 3 or more, taking the points with Lafayette. Set a total of 144.5, so 144 or less in on the over, 145 or higher the under. Now, Monmouth is outside the top 3 with regards to their 2-point shooting percentage, but you do bring back a lot of versatile pieces from a season ago. Like Jack Collins has been in the program for quite a while. He's able to give you like 10 points, 5 boards, 3 plus assists per game. You've had Justin Ray be able to give you 13 points per game. And this Lafayette team has been very poor with their low post defense. They lose Justin Vanderbond, their true 7-footer from a season ago, so they've been outside the top 3 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. They've been outside the top 290 with regards to defensive rebound percentage. And it's a Lafayette team that's turning the ball over 13 times per game on offense. You've got 2 main guys in Andrew Phillips and Caleb Williams. They're combining for 34 points per game, and they're both shooting 40%+ from three, not getting a lot of help from their friends. So as you've had Ryan Pettit, Mark Butler be in the system for quite a while, they haven't necessarily been able to give you a ton, and On the flip side, for Monmouth, it is a team that does have some nice low post pieces that I think are going to be able to do a nice job holding up down low. Doc Mortar has only been able to give you about 2.5 rebounds per game, but he's a shot blocking machine with 2+ blocks per game. Cornelius Robinson Jr. is just a mixer and shaker, 6 points, 4 boards. He's right now made like 3 out of the 5 threes that he's attempted this year, but that's not going to be long lasting. But like the versatility of Jason Rivera Torres, saw some meaningful minutes over at Vanderbilt 2 seasons ago, 12.5 points, 8.5 boards, a steal and a half, a block and a half per contest. And for this Monmouth team, they've been having a tough time taking care of the ball. They're turning the ball over about 13.5 times per game. They're allowing a lot of offensive rebounds, but Lafayette's not necessarily generating a lot of offensive rebounds. So good old situation of something's got to give. Lafayette has been a team that's been just outside the top tier in terms of total possessions per game for this Monmouth team. They're right around about 178th in terms of total possessions per game. So made it total to where 144 less in on the over, 145 or higher the under. Monmouth, I'm willing to lay up two deuces with them. 3 or more, take the points with Lafayette. 36-5-79, 36-5-80. It is West Virginia, and they play us two Merciers. Merciers, a 22.5 point underdog, 129.5 to 130 is the total. This is a total year of a 132.5. I'm going to be in on the over. West Virginia, well outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game, top 55 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Merciers is not a team that's going to be looking to gun it either. With this Merciers team right now in terms of total possessions per game, 343rd. I do think that Merciers, though, going to see a little bit of negative regression to the smoldering start that they've had in terms of holding teams to shoot 29.6% from 3-point. They themselves are shooting 30% from 3, so I think that they see some positive 3-point shooting progression with their offense and negative on the defensive side of things. And for Merciers, I do think that they're going to be just a little bit outgunned down low against Harlan Obia, who's been able to give this West Virginia team 6+ rebounds per game, and then Brennan Lorient has been very good. He's been able to give the team 14+ points, 6+ rebounds per game. Jasper Floyd will give you like 10 points, 4+ boards, 3 assists, just does a little bit of everything. And for Merciers, you've got Bernie Blunt, who's really the main returner from the season ago, shooting 35% for 3, 16 points, pair of assists per contest. Jake Lehman has been able to give you 2.5 assists per game, as Merciers has cleaned up their act. They're only turning the ball over about 11.5 times per game. Now, the 64% free throw shooting, that's a little bit less than savory, but on the West Virginia side of things, I do think that you're going to be able to get quite a bit of production moving forward at Trayson Eaglestaff, who's been a little bit of a disappointment this year. He's only been able to supply the team with 7 points per game, and you've had Chance Moore be able to just not be able to get out there on the floor, so that should allow for some more opportunities as Hunter Huff has been able to give you 15+ points per game. But with Eaglestaff, seems like he's been heating up a little bit more. You had that 20-point game against Xavier. Perhaps that's going to be able to get him going after he was an 18+ point per game guy over at North Dakota 8 seasons ago. And then DJ Turner Up Thomas has been a nice 6-man, 8 points per contest. Now, he's only shooting about 23% from 3 as a whole. West Virginia is shooting 34% from the outside. They've been allowing teams to shoot 37% from 3. I think that there's a little bit of positivity due there about West Virginia for being slow. They're very efficient. Only turned the ball over about 10 times for contest, so do think they get just enough efficiency here for the over. I did somebody total 132.5, and with Mercier, set them as a 20.5 point underdog, so you're at the 22.5, 23.5. I'm going to be willing to take those points. 36-5-81, 36-5-82. Fordham and Colgate do better from Place Bell. This is a neutral court game, and this is off the board, and I've got my handicap. I did set Colgate as a favorite of 4 points, so I'm going to be willing to lay up to 3.5 with them, 4.5 or more, taking those points with Fordham, and then I did set a total here of a 139 or less in on the over, 140.5 or higher the under. You've got two teams that have played a lot of basketball over the last 4 days, so they're going to be a little bit tired out, and you got a pair of teams that are just really not looking to push tempo. Fordham is well outside the top three in terms of total possessions per game. For Colgate, they're a little bit faster than they were a season ago, but again, not a team that's necessarily playing at warp speed, 224th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But for Colgate, they've been able to find a little bit more swagger from 3-point than they had a season ago. They're shooting about 33% from 3. I do think that goes northward, as Sam Wright, who shot in the high 30s from 3-point last season, entered in yesterday, shooting only about 26% for 3. 6-7 combo players giving you 14.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. Now, the one thing about Colgate is that they do not give themselves second chances here. A bottom 10 team in the country in terms of percentage of their missed shots are resulting in an offensive rebound, but they don't turn the ball over a lot, only about 10.5 turnovers per game. Jalen Cox has become an ice do-it-all guy, 17 points, 5.5 boards, 5 assists, and that's so critical to this team. You go back to the likes of Nelly Cummings, Jordan Burns, even Braden Smith. I mean, they always have one of those guys, and he's really been that guy, but for Colgate as well. They're a team that is allowing quite a bit down low outside the top 175 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage, and they're giving up all sorts of second and third chances. Like, this is a team as well outside the top three in terms of defensive rebound percentage. So Fordham, a team that's been a top 35 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage, they should be able to really dominate this game. They're just a top 40 team in terms of rebound percentage as a whole. And for Fordham, you've been able to have Rikes Schulte be able to give you about 9 boards, 11.5 points per game. I like the pickup of Marcus Green from Hawaii. He's really been one of the few guys that's been able to bomb it from three, as he's been able to shoot 40% from 3, 7.5 points per contest. DeJure Reeves dealt with a little bit of injury to begin the season, but he's up to 17 points. He's right now shooting 39% from 3-point. And you've also had in and out of the lineup Zarik Nutter as well, a nice shoot-all guy that was a double-figure scorer over at Georgia State a season ago. I have to think that he's still going to be out of the fold, as he's been missing throughout this entire event. But still, even with him out, you've still got Christian Henry, who's able to give you 8.5 points. He's been doling out 5 assists per game. For a Fordham team, though, they're very slow. They're only turning the ball over about 11 times per game. They're doing a nice job as a top 55 team in terms of opponents' field goal shooting percentage. But I do think that backcourt play for Colgate is really starting to gel. And Fordham dealing with that injury to Zarik Nutter, I do think that that's going to be hurting them a little bit. And Lewis Lesman, who comes over from Harvard, just 5 points, 4 rebounds per game, expected a little bit more out of him. So with Colgate, I'm willing to lay up to 3.5 with them. 4.5 for more, taking the points with Fordham. 139.5 for less, in on the over. 140.5 for higher, the under. 3-6-5-83, 3-6-5-84. Coastal Carolina is going to be playing us to Alabama A&M. A&M is a 6.5 to a 7-point underdog. It's on this game between 138 to a 139.5. And with Coastal, I made them a 6-point favorite. So here at 6.5+, I'm going to be one to take the points with Alabama A&M. It is a team that's in quite a bit of transition, as they went to the Grambling system with Dante Jackson coming in as the new coach, and he brought with him quite a few guys. James Graham has been able to give the team about 8.5 points per contest. Their main guard in Kadavian Dozier, he's a lone guy right now, giving the scene double figures with 13.5 points per game. He comes over as well. James Flippin is a guy that comes over as a 6'10 big man as well in Grambling, year in and year out. A team that was outside the top three in terms of total possessions per game. Now, Grambling's having a really tough time down low with their defense. They're outside the top 340 in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage. They're outside the top 320 with regards to their offensive rebound percentage as well. They're just not giving themselves second and third chances. But I do like what Caron Davis has been able to bring to the table. He comes over from Louisiana, where he was an 8.5 point per game scorer in a very small sample size last season. He's been able to supply the scene with 7 points, a steal, about 6 rebounds per game. So he's been able to do a little bit of this and that. And Coastal Carolina has been really slowing themselves down over the last few years, ever since they hired on Justin Gray, who was over at Western Carolina. Now, last season, this team was just really, really slow. They were well outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. They sped themselves up to being more mid-tempo, about 135th in terms of total possessions per game. Coastal Carolina, one of the worst teams of the country in terms of generating turnovers, though, so you're going to get clean possessions. They do a nice job in terms of cleaning up the glass. Top 75 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage, as they do bring back one of their main guards from a season ago, Rashid Jones, who's been able to give you 14 points per game, and the Joshua Beadle, who was actually very rock solid over at Boston College a season ago. He gives you 16 points per game. Both are shooting 40-plus percent from three-point range. You've been able to have a rebound-by-committee sort of system with this team, as right now you've got 6 different guys who've been able to give you at least 4.4 rebounds per game, with A.J. Dantzler, who comes over from Lemoyne, being that top rebounder, doing it all. A steal, 3.5 assists, 6 rebounds, 13.5 points per game. Shoots in the mid-30s from three-point range, but in a nip-and-tuck situation, Coastal Carolina shooting 65.3% at the free throw line. That is very much going to be negatively affecting them. This has been a top 75 team in terms of opponents' overall field goal shooting percentage. I think that there might be a little bit of positivity there, and Alabama A&M has been giving it up a little bit more, so I did set a total here of a 142. I'm going to be willing to take a shot in the over, and at anything above 6, won't take those points with Alabama A&M. 3-6-5-85, 3-6-5-86. You've got Prairie View on the road against North Texas. North Texas is a favorite of 14.5 to 15 points. 137-138.5 is the total. To set a total here of a 143.5, I'm going to be in on the over. Prairie View is a team that really gambles for turnovers. They've been in the top 10 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis 5 out of the last 7 years. Are always in the top 50 with that regard, but they are going to look to move it, as this is a Prairie View team that's right now 42nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. North Texas, they're on their third different coaching regime that is back outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. 329th in terms of total possessions per game. It doesn't matter who they hire you on. They could hire on Greg Peterson, and it'll be outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game. But that's it for North Texas. You do have some pretty efficient shooters here. Will McClendon, he spent some time over at UCLA and also San Jose State. 13 points, 4 boards, and I always love saying San Jose State, even though it's supposed to be San Jose State. But I mean, that said, he's been dealing with a little bit of an injury. He's probably going to be out of the fold in this game, but even without him, you should be able to get some good production out of David Terrell. He's been a mid-30s 3-point shooter, 10.5 points, 4.5 assists per game. And Jashawn Stevenson, he comes on over from Cleveland State trade along Dylan Arnett, along with the new coach in Daniel Robinson. And if you looked at what Robinson did at Cleveland State, it seems we're always bad on the defensive glass. They're always outside the top three in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They typically do a nice job in terms of hauling in their second and third chances themselves. Don't know if those are quite going to be there for Prairie View. Prairie View is notoriously a bottom 20 team in terms of rebound percentage, and this year they're more in the bottom 75. They've been a little bit better this year because they bring back Marcel Bryant from a season ago. He's given you 3.5 boards, 9 points per game, and Corey Wells has been pretty solid for the team. 13.5 points, 5.5 boards, comes on over from Utah Valley. And Utah Valley always does a good job on the glass, playing a little bit of a rough and tumble system, so that helps them out quite a bit. And you've got explosive scoring with Terrion Joseph. 2 years ago over at Southern, he was averaging 20 points per game. He's back to averaging 20 points per game for Prairie View. And now it's a Prairie View team that's only shooting about 30% from three, so leaving something to be desired there. Prairie View is back inside the top 50 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and I do think that they're going to be able to get things cranked up tempo a little bit more, but I do think that North Texas could be able to break that pressure. They've got a lot of nice positionless basketball. You've had a freshman in EJ Horton be able to step up recently with all the injuries that we've been seeing in the backcourt, and I do think that for North Texas, they do find a way to be able to get the job done here, as I did set my line at a 15.5. At a 15 or less, I'm going to be willing to lay with North Texas, and I'm going to be in on the over. I did set a total of a 143.5, 3.65. 587, 3-6-5-88. American is going to be playing host to Longwood. This is a game that's off the board because these two teams played yesterday, but I've got my handicap as I did set American as a 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to a 1 with them, 2 or more taking the points with Longwood, and then I set a total here of a 141.5. So 141 or less and on the over, 142 or higher the under. American came into the day yesterday in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game. I think they're realizing that they were playing too fast for their own good, as last two seasons they've been outside the top 340 in terms of total possessions per game. I don't know if they go back to quite being that big of slugs, but it did feel like they were getting a little bit loose and sloppy with the ball, with about 12.5 turnovers per game. Now, they've been a top 100 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and top 75 team in terms of 2-point shooting percentage. The 3-point shooting for this team has been a little bit hotter and cold. They're shooting about 33.5% from three. Maiden Collins and Greg Jones have been able to combine for about 26 points per game, but their top two scorers are combining to shoot about 25% from three. That's a little bit lackluster, and it's been a lot of facilitation by committee. Each of their top six scorers are giving between 1.9 to 2.7 assists per game. So that's been really interesting to take a look at, to say the least. It's an American team that has been getting a little bit bludgeoned on the glass, or outside the top 175 in terms of their rebound percentage. And for Longwood, the squad has been very good at generating turnovers, a top 50 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They themselves, though, turn the ball over 14 times per game. That's outside the top 10 in all of college basketball. For Longwood, they've been very reliant upon getting to the free throw line. They're a top 50 team in terms of percentage of their points that come from the free throw line, as you've got Jonah Nazim along with Jaquay Hutchinson headlining things in the backcourt, combining for about 26.5 points per game, combining for 2.5 steals. And Hutchinson, he comes over from George Washington. He's been able to give out 3.5 assists per game. Nazimi has been your main outside shooter, shooting about 43% from 3 points. But Longwood is very much looking to pile drive the ball down, though. Longwood is outside the top 320 in terms of percentage of the shots that come from 3-point range. For Longwood, they have been having a tough time in terms of guarding the interior as well. They're outside the top 320 in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, and they've been giving it up a little bit from 3-point range. This has been a team that has been gambling for turnovers, so do think that American is going to slow themselves down a little bit more, and that allows them to be able to get the job done. I said American to where I'm willing to lay up to a point with them. Pretty much I'm probably going to be in on whoever the underdog is, because I set such a tight line, but one or less, willing to lay up with American, 2 or more, taking the points of Longwood, 141 or less, in on the over, 142 or higher the under, 3-6-5-89, 3-6-5-90. Presbyterian is going to be playing against the Citadel. This is a neutral court game from Cherokee Center, and Presbyterian is a 6.5-point favorite. It's the last game between 136 after a 137, and Operation Fade, the Citadel is back on like Donkey Kong. I set my line at 9.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with Presbyterian, and for Presbyterian, they are one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. They're a bottom 5 team in terms of total possessions per game. Citadel's outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game, but man, the Citadel's really not doing anything right. They're outside the top 275 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis. This is a squad that has actually taken good care of the ball. The Citadel is only turning the ball over about like 10.5 times per game, so that's one thing that they do have going for them, but even though they're having clean possessions, it's not leading to points. You've got Christian Moore and Braxton Williams, who have been able to combine for 22 points per game, and Moore has been able to give you more. He's shooting 42% from 3-point range, but this team does not do a great job on the boards, as right now they are not grabbing a lot of second and third chances. They're allowing teams to shoot over 57% from 2-point range. That's outside the top 325 in all of college basketball. And even though they really don't turn the ball over. They don't force any turnovers either. They're outside the top 335 in terms of pressuring the ball, being able to generate turnovers. And that helps out a Presbyterian team that has had a little bit of difficulty in taking care of the ball. They've been outside the top 275 in terms of their ball security. And we should see Presbyterian, who's right now shooting 26.9% from three, have a little bit of positivity there. They should be able to really win this battle down low. Jalen Peterson, great name, and Jonah Pierce have been able to combine for 16 rebounds, 2 blocks per contest. You've got Pierce give you 14.5 points per game. Peterson a little bit more of an ancillary score as he, Tristan Wilson, and Eric Taylor all between 6.2 and 7.3 points per game. Carl Parrish has been that main man in the backcourt. He's been able to give you 12.5 points, pair of assists, shooting only about 32% from 3-point range, but for this Presbyterian team, they have been able to do a nice job in terms of limiting three-point attempts. They're a top 50 team in terms of pushing teams off the three-point line, and I do think that with Presbyterian being a top 150 team in terms of rebound percentage, they are able to win from within, and they think that the Citadel is going to, once again, allow for some clean possessions here, but I think that this is going to be just such a super slow game that you have a tough time with this total. Semi-total, 135.5, I'm in on the under of the Presbyterian. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 9 with them, and then wrap things up with 306-591, 306-592, copy State on the road against Loyola Maryland. Loyola is an 11.5 point favorite. So on this game, it is 139.5, and I am going to be willing to lay it with Loyola Maryland. I did set them as a favorite of 18.5 points. I just am not about this Coppin State team. They're outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Coppin State has been looking to push a little bit more tempo this year. They're about 193rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got this Loyola Maryland team who's typically relatively controlled. They're about 225th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but this Coppin State team, out of 364 Division I teams last year, they were 363rd in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. A little bit of improvement, but they're about 355th right now, and they just don't have a go-to score. They don't really have that one guy that's able to take ownership of the offense right now. As right now, DeMond Terry Hall has been able to give you 10.5 points, 6 rebounds per game. You've had Hassan Perkins give you a little bit of facilitation with 3 assists per game. He comes on over from Maryland Eastern Shore, but he's only been able to fly about 5 points per game. This team really has no 3-point shooting to speak of, as they're shooting 28.5% from 3-point range. You're outside the top 250 in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. You're outside the top 275 in terms of rebound percentage as well. And for this Loyola Maryland team, they should do a nice job with just the, depth of guards that they've got. Jordan Stemke has been able to do a nice job as an ancillary guy with about 8.5 points per game. And then Troy Cicero, Jonas Sturtis, they've been able to give you about 8 points per contest. And Satutis has been able to give you about 5 rebounds per game. This is a Loyola Maryland team that in a lot of situations is going to be outgunned down low. They're outside the top 150 in terms of rebound percentage, but in this case, they very, very much are going to be able to win that battle against a completely outgunned Coppin State team with Loyola Maryland. You've had Jacob Dedusu come in, give the team 16 points, 2.5 assists per game. He's shooting it rough from three, and Brandon Speed has as well. He's been able to give you 11.5 points per game, but you've got Cicero right now shooting 54.5% from 3-point range. The answer, you guys have really been able to heat it up from 3-point range, and I think that with Coppin State, just frankly, losing in every facet of the game of basketball, it's going to be a rough one for them. I did set my total 136.5, like the under, and with Loyola Maryland, I'm going to be willing to lay up to 18 with them, and that'll wrap things up for the Sunday edition of Cusco Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Ben Wilson, who does great work here at VSiN. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Cusco Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunit_81. Keep in mind, Larry Sam, maybe it does not matter. So, per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day, give you guys picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. So, I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.